This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, here on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. All right, today, Sheldon Whitehouse on addressing the Citizens Climate Lobby Convention on also brought to you by Billy Bob Clinton's Missiles R Us.
Hi, I'm Billy Bob Clinton, the largest dealer of missiles in the world. I've sold more missiles than anybody. I'll eat a bug to sell you a missile. I got a herd of missiles. I'm practically giving them away. They're stacked up here like cordwood. No cash. We have instant credit. We'll take just about any collateral. We'll take oil, minerals, cheap labor, just about anything. This week's special F-15 fighters, only 5 left, so get here fast. Take the Pennsylvania Avenue past Silo 16 till you come to the crater in the road. Turn right and you're at Billy Bob Clinton's Missiles R Us. Come near closing time wearing a thong and I'll show you a wrinkled missile.
There's a scourge threatening the airwaves right now. I'm talking about that earworm wrangler and rhyme criminal, Justin Bieber. I don't care if he gets his coke from Colombia, his product from Pennsylvania, he should be arrested just for rhyming holy with hold me. His music is vapid, his lyrics are trite. Now don't kill Justin Bieber, cutting his hair will only slow him down. If you want to stop Justin Bieber and others like him, go to kepw.org and become a sustaining member. Or just send a couple of dollars. We're all volunteers, so you get more bang for your buck. Go to kepw.org and stop inane music today. On June 30th, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a decision in the case of West Virginia versus EPA, which curtails the EPA's authority in the fight to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. President Biden will be unable to keep his promises on global warming without congressional action. Citizens Climate Lobby volunteers have an opportunity to submit letters to the editor pointing out the need for a price on carbon. The following is an example of what the letter could say. The U.S. Supreme Court decision in West Virginia versus EPA means that the world cannot depend on strong EPA regulations to fight global warming without congressional authorization. The Citizens Climate Lobby proposes that Congress enact a price on carbon with the money going back to households on an equal basis. Currently, the higher prices motorists pay at the pump means that more money goes to the oil companies. Under the legislation that CCL supports, the extra money would go back to the people. U.S. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse told a CCL conference in June that a price on carbon is still possible in 2022 as part of a budget reconciliation package that would avoid a Senate filibuster. I suggest using your own words, perhaps including an explanation of why you are concerned about global warming. If several people send in letters to the editor about the Supreme Court decision, chances are good that one will be printed. See below for instructions on how to submit letters to the Register Guard and the Eugene Weekly. Instructions on sending letters to the editor to the Eugene Weekly is eugeneweekly.com/2018/5/14/... How to write a letter or guest viewpoint. Letters to the Register Guard should be 200 words or fewer and sent with the writer's name, address, and daytime phone number via email to rgletters@registerguard.com.
Thank you all. Thank you all so much. I tell you, I love Citizens Climate Lobby. You guys are the best. There is no better environmental group. And particular shout out to my Rhode Islanders right here. One of the things that we can often do in Congress is achieve the best political result that is possible. And there are lots of issues where you can do that. You can't get everything you want, but you can achieve the best political result that is possible. And that's considered to be usually a big success. Climate's a little different, isn't it? Because Mother Nature has a vote. And hers is the stern vote. There was a TV campaign when I was a kid that ended up, "It's not nice to mess with Mother Nature." And that's been echoed by Pope Francis, who said, "You beware. You slap nature, she will slap you back." And we have been slapping nature with carbon emissions and greenhouse gases for decades, and now we are being slapped back. We're seeing it in the wildfires, we're seeing it in the flooding, we're seeing it in the heat waves, we're seeing it all around the world. And I want to offer one word to all of you, something to consider, and that is the word zettajoule. Zettajoule. That's Z-E-T-T-A-J-O-U-L-E. Those of you who are scientists will know that the joule, J-O-U-L-E, is the unit of measurement for energy, for heat energy in particular. So a joule of energy is a quantum of energy. A zettajoule has 21 zeros. It is a massively, massively big number. It is such a big number that all of the energy created by all of the people in all of the world every year adds up to one half of a zettajoule. And of that half a zettajoule, not all of it is fossil fuel. Fossil fuel is a portion of that. And for the price of that portion of fossil fuel, we put into our oceans every single year 14 zettajoules of excess heat energy. The oceans are being bombarded with so much extra heat that the only way you could match it mechanically would be to set off 3 or 4 Hiroshima-level nuclear devices in the ocean every second. That's how we're loading up the oceans with heat. And that's just one part of the problem that we're causing. So Mother Nature has a vote, and if we don't pass Mother Nature's test, it doesn't matter if we pass whatever political test somebody comes up with. So this is a long way of coming back to where I started, which is thanking you, because no group in the environmental community has been more determined to get the emissions down, to get after things like carbon pricing that will get the emissions down, to understand that this is a problem that, yeah, we can win it in Congress, but if we haven't won it in nature's equation, we still lose. It's not enough to do what is politically possible. It is mandatory that we do what nature demands. So thank you, thank you, thank you. So before I get out of your hair, let me give you a quick summary of where I think we are right now. And the first thing I'll say is that reconciliation is still alive. It turns into a pumpkin on September 30th. And because we will be clearing out at some point in August, and a lot of people will be pretty desperate to get back to their home states and campaign and make sure we try to hang on to the Senate in November, the time period between when we leave in August and September 30 is not very conducive to getting anything done. So although the legal expiry date for reconciliation is September 30, the practical expiry date is whatever day in August we leave. So that's not a whole lot of time, but it's our shot. And what we can do with that shot right now, and what I think the sort of positive, likeliest scenario is that we can do a great amount of the Finance Committee clean energy tax credits. Not all of them. But a lot of them. And if you look at them, that adds up to a lot of emissions reduction. The other thing that I think we can do is a methane fee. And where I think we are, I've been watching the methane fee thing closely because it's my bill. But the where we are is that Chairman Carper of the Environment and Public Works Committee had what appear to be very successful negotiations. And the result is that I think we have all 50 Democratic senators on for the renegotiated package. And as you know, in politics, there's a saying, nothing is decided until everything is decided. But there are things along the way that are decided enough that you set them on the shelf and go on to the things that aren't yet decided. And in my view, the methane program is now on the shelf, waiting for the moment to pass. And as you know, that's big on emissions reduction. The carbon equivalency is extremely, extremely high, and so if we can do that, that's a big deal. And the last piece is either a price on carbon with a carbon border adjustment, or a carbon border adjustment with a price on carbon. And if we can do that, that's a really, really, really big deal. And it goes beyond just solving our emissions problem in the United States. It creates economic conditions that drive other less efficient countries to have to catch up with us if they want to participate in the American marketplace, which is the biggest marketplace in the world, if they want to come play in our pool. They got to clean up their act or pay. And that really is a very powerful signal. So yeah, give it a hand. You can have pledges all day long about what you're going to do by 2050. But when you're getting your companies tariffed because they're polluting now, now that's a behavior changer. Just so you know, I'm going to be an Olympic athlete by 2050. Until then, I'm eating donuts, but I'm absolutely pledging that I'm going to be an Olympic athlete in 2050. You got to do stuff now that matters, and that does. I'll say one last thing, because behind all this, or beside all this, are two quick things. One, the HFCs. We actually got that done. And they're even worse than methane, so if at the end of the day we've got HFCs, we've got the bulk of the finance clean energy tax credits, we've got the methane fee, and we've got a carbon border adjustment / carbon price, that's not a bad year's work. And the The last piece out there is the so-called CBAM. The CBAM is the EU's carbon border adjustment mechanism. And it has been very well developed. They just had a hiccup in their first vote on it, but they're still going and they're still targeting having a carbon border adjustment starting in 2023 and ramping up till it's fully in effect in 2026. So that's happening soon. And there's an interesting fact about it that I want to share with you. And that is that if you look at it as a bilateral trade problem in which the United States companies have to pay tariffs to the EU in order to export into the EU because we are less efficient than they are, then it looks like we're losing. But it's not bilateral. It's global, it's multilateral. And when you compare the small tariff that the US would pay with the tariffs that other manufacturing countries would pay, particularly China and India, China is 3 times less carbon safe than we are, 3 times more carbon intense. India, 4 times, Russia, more than 4 times. So if you're a European company and the CBAM goes into effect and you're looking at who's going to supply you your widgets, we may pay a little tariff, but by God, there are going to be a lot of widget companies that are moving to the United States of America because we are cleaner than other manufacturers. And that will be a bigger economic lift for us than the penalty of the tariffs. We win from the EU CBAM, even if we don't step up with a tariff of our own. And if we step up with a tariff of our own, with a carbon border adjustment of our own, now it's a really big win. And what we really want to see at the end of the day is the EU, the UK, Canada, the United States, all the major economic actors on the same carbon fee platform, driving the rest of the world to clean up their act, because if you don't clean up your act, you can't play in our pool. That's where we need to be. So I'll close where I began, and that's thanking all of you, because we would not be in this position if you hadn't got on the phones and gone door to door and come to Washington and called and emailed and done all the work that you did to put life and energy into carbon pricing and carbon border adjustment. You did that. You did that. No group worked harder, and I will tell you there are a lot of groups who are willing to walk away from that and accept a package that didn't have that emissions reduction effect, that wasn't tested to the standard of Mother Nature. So please go out, work hard, keep pushing. We are not there yet, but it is within reach. And the reason it is within reach is because of work you have already done. So go out there and do your work with real confidence and joy about what you've accomplished already to get us to this point. And now let's just close the damn deal and get it done.
What would you like to do? Should I take a few questions or should we just go on? Okay.
You want to come up? Join me for questions? All right. Madeline has said we can take a question or two, but I said she has to come up on the audience so that I've got a, you know, buddy up here. So.
Is there somebody with a mic?
There's a mic right here, I see.
Okay, so raise your hand.
And there's a mic right here. And there's a mic right here. So anybody who wants to, there's a question and there's a mic.
Thank you very much, Senator. If you were a betting man, what would you put the odds of us celebrating on September 30th?
It's hard to tell. But I would say north of 50-50. Because the fact of the matter is we cannot go home without having gotten this done. Right? It's not like, oh, now we have a deal that everybody loves, let's go home. No. Mother Nature has the vote. And if we haven't gotten to something that puts us on a safe pathway, then we got to just stay. And I'll tell you what, you want to focus the attention of the House and the Senate? Make them stay into August. So yeah, I think, you know, the odds are one thing, but we get a vote in that too. Any other? If not, we can all go back to, drinking and carousing.
No, we haven't. So who was it in your life that made you such a passionate champion for the climate and for environment?
I would probably have to give credit for that to my wife. Sandra is a marine biologist. One of the ways I tried to make myself acceptable to her was to help with her work, which included slogging a lot of mud around the labs and also diving with her in Narragansett Bay in like February. When that wetsuit fills up, it gets your attention. And I can remember her major professor who was doing her dissertation. She came over and he said, you know, Narragansett Bay is already warmer by 4 degrees. And idiot that I was, I said, what's 4 degrees? 71, 75, you go in, I can't tell the difference. That's no big deal. 4 degrees. He said, let me sit you down, son. And he started explaining that I don't live there. For the creatures that live there, this is a really big deal. This is an entire ecosystem shift, and how things get totally torn up an ecosystem shift, how stability and the development of creatures into their niches is such an important and valuable work of Mother Nature and all of that. And that was a really big, oh shit, moment for me. And that was thanks to her work.
Got one over here.
By the way, the species that she studied is no longer extant in any significant way in Narragansett Bay because of the turnover. Crangon septem spinosa has a minor role now, and the larval flounders that it interacts with, her work is essentially of historical significance and not current significance because of how we've already changed just that one bay. So yeah, Sandra. All right, one more.
Over here, Senator.
All right.
First of all, just want to thank you for all the hard work you're doing on behalf of progress. And wanted to ask, because we know in reconciliation there's a lot of trade-offs that go on, and you've spoken very confidently about carbon pricing. So for those of us in, you know, with high hopes and a sense that there's going to be some sacrifices or trade-offs, what should we be prepared for in reconciliation? Like, what kinds of changes should we be looking at in the short term versus the long term? What should we be getting prepared for on that?
Well, I think the most obvious casualty so far that we've seen is subsidies for consumers who are buying electric vehicles. That's the bad news. The good news is that, as somebody said, when there's a line out the door of the ice cream store, you don't really need to be subsidizing ice cream. They can't make electric vehicles fast enough. Companies are pouring in. You have these huge lines for F-150s and for Rivians and for all of that, and people are putting money down to get in line. So the market is really doing a very, very good job of solving the uptake problem, and that moves the EV credit question into a slightly different category, which is, how do you make sure that lower income people can afford these, and what do you do when supply meets demand? So that's a question that I think can move to the out years, and we can still address it and change the curve that way. And then, you know, the question is going to be, how do we get to 50 votes on some combination of border adjustment and carbon price? I think, as I said, I think methane's pretty good, and that's going to be the tough one. And I think the pressure of the inflation issue is going to be difficult. By the way, that damned fossil fuel industry, how long did it take them from when Putin crossed the border to start blasting to the entire world that the solution was the Keystone XL pipeline and for them to drill more? There is no truth to that at all. Some of it doesn't even make logical sense, but it doesn't matter to them. They pushed it out there so hard, and it took us a long time to get our feet under us and to take our own stance and to push back. So the inflation issue is one that is very, very real, but it is also one that the fossil fuel industry has taken really nasty advantage of, and we need to be prepared as a movement to push back against that. The gas prices are high because gas companies set high prices. It is not that complicated. You let Joe Biden set gas prices, he'll take a dollar off the price at the pump tomorrow, and they'll still be making a boatload of money. So, you know, you kind of almost have to admire the malevolent character of the determination of our adversaries here, but do be ready on the inflation question. They have created this. by choosing to follow international cartel pricing rather than choosing to follow what the market would ordinarily say they should do, which is cost of production plus a reasonable profit. They chose this. They're doing this on purpose. It is their choice. And we know it because they're reporting massive, massive profits and earnings. They can't lie about their earnings. So that's what you see. So be careful about the inflation argument when you hear it. That is probably one you're going to hear. Turn it right back on them. They chose these gas prices. And with that, all right. Thank you all so much. God bless you. Go get them tomorrow.
Well, tell you what. Now, to balance the scale, I'd like to talk about some things that bring us together. Things that point out our similarities instead of our differences. Because that's all you ever hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the fucking money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything they can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank. You know how I describe the economic and social classes in this country? The upper class keeps all of the money, pays none of the taxes. The middle class pays all of the taxes, does all of the work. The poor are there just to scare the shit out of the middle class. Keep them showing up at those jobs. So, by the way, speaking of American values, aren't we about due to start bombing some small country that only has a marginally effective air force? Seems to me like we're weeks overdue to drop high explosives on helpless civilians. People who have no argument with us whatsoever. I think we ought to be out there doing what we do best, gang, making large holes in other people's countries. I hate to be repetitious, but we are a warlike lot. We can't stand it not to be for somebody. We couldn't wait for that Cold War to be over, could we? Couldn't wait for the Cold War to be over so we can go and play with our toys in the sand. Go and play with our toys in the sand. And when we're not invading some sovereign nation or setting it on fire from the air, which is more fun for our Nintendo pilots, then we're usually declaring war on something here at home. Did you ever notice that about us? We love to declare war on things here in America. Anything we don't like about ourselves, we declare war on it. We don't do anything about it. We just declare war on it. It's the only metaphor we have in our public discourse for solving problems, declaring war. We have to declare a war on everything. We have a war on crime, the war on poverty, the war on litter, the war on cancer, the war on drugs. But you ever notice we got no war on homelessness, huh? No war on homelessness. You know why? There's no money in that problem. No money to be made off of the homeless.
CoolRadio.org. Of course, that was George Carlin, and before that was Michael Renner of the World Watch Institute. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Thank you. Radio.org. Of course, that was Stu Hamm.
The one and only Stuart Hamm on bass guitar.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll be right back.